You're listening to Occult Symbolism of Pop Culture. I'm your host, Isaac Weisab. Today, we're back in the Grey Lodge. It's a Grey Lodge episode. We're going to go through another great episode of Twin Peaks. This one is Season 1, Episode 4, The One-Armed Man, a.k.a. Episode 5. You know I hate the numbering. I like to go by Season 1, Episode 4. And this one's going to be a banger. This is going to be a longer episode. Directed by Tim Hunter, written by Robert Engels. And you know, I'm not a Hollywood guy. I don't really know what that means. All I know is that I'm sure, because you watch every episode of Twin Peaks, and they all feel very much similar, right? I mean, unless you want to split hairs, they all seem inspired. I thought every episode was directed by David Lynch and written by Mark Frost and David Lynch. I thought that the first time I watched Twin Peaks. I didn't find out till later that, almost every episode is by a different director, which is pretty amazing. I don't know how Hollywood works, if there's like an executive producer that tries to make sure the vibe's all the same. Whatever. I just like to tell you because I like to be thorough, okay? The episode starts out Sheriff Truman and the fellas, they're at the Palmer House. And you'll notice the exterior film location was different for Season 1 than it was for Fire Walk With Me. All right. Just a little Twin Peaks trivia. They're sketching out the man that Sarah Palmer saw, Bob. And Leland reveals to the police that Sarah had another vision. He smirks. She had two visions. All right. And it was one of Bob, and then it was also one of the gloved hand retrieving the other half of Laura's broken heart necklace. It was at the end of one of the previous episodes. Remember when she screamed? Next, at the sheriff's office, Lucy's watching Invitation to Love, the mini soap opera going on the television sets. And you'll hear the storyline is about, because Sheriff Truman comes in and says, "Hey, Lucy, what's going on?" And she, a little comedy break, she tells him the plot of Invitation to Love. And he's like, "No, what's going on here at the sheriff's department?" So you'll hear the storyline. You'll hear talk about Twin Towers and emeralds and jades. Well, that's kind of interesting, right? The Twin Towers is another, this is a concept in Kabbalah of the Twin Pillars of Boaz and Yaakin. The entrance to the new realm, the mystical place, which is very apropos for Twin Peaks. Emerald also is reminiscent of the Emerald Tablets in the story of alchemy. Hermes Trismegistus or Thoth gave man the secrets to alchemy, and man wrote it on the, I think man or Thoth gave it to him on emerald tablets, or man wrote them on emerald tablets. And then they were held in the Library of Alexandria, which burned down, and I think they got lost or something like that. And then Jade is the name of one of the characters, which is very curious in Twin Peaks. It comes up many times, the Jade Ring, the Jade on Invitation to Love, and then in Season 3, there's a character named Jade. And this is a concept we talked about in Aliens, UFOs, and the Occult, Use Your Illusion 1. Because in that book, which lays out a Gnostic view of reality, there was an idea presented of the gods needing blood sacrifice and why children were preferred. And arguably, according to some conspiracy theories, still, to this day, it happens. The Aztecs revered the blood of children because it was still unripened. And what does a tomato look like when it's not ripe yet? It's green. So jade was symbolic for the pure, unripe blood because it's green. They believed that as the souls get older, the souls all have a piece of the divine energy of God. And as it gets older, it gets more ensnared and trapped within the body. So children, it was easier to release this energy back to God. So they wanted to release this divine energy, and oftentimes they would use very violent sacrifices, tearing off limbs and heads, yanking out the heart. Because you got to understand, the Gnostic view of reality was that the soul, which is part of God, is trapped in this evil material body. There was a saying, there had to be blood, for blood was the spirit. So anyway, just kind of interesting, right? Moving on. Cooper is interrogating Dr. Jacoby. You see the map of Tibet behind him, which Dr. Jacoby makes note of. And Cooper asks Dr. Jacoby if Laura was seeing him for a variety of reasons. Was it cocaine? Was it sexual problems? And Dr. Jacoby has a very interesting answer. And this is one of the main themes that we find in Twin Peaks. Take a listen.
Was Laura Palmer seeing you because she was addicted to cocaine?
Agent Cooper, I'd like to help you, but got a little problem here. Look, maybe there's some sort of hula we can do around my doctor-patient confidentiality, huh?
It is safe to say she came to you because she was having problems.
Oh, my, yes.
Were her problems of a sexual nature?
Agent Cooper, the problems of our entire society are of a sexual nature. Tibet. You know, my abiding interests lie to the east as well. But only as far as Hawaii. The ancient Hawaiians often turned to the soothing rhizome of the ginger plant to ease the pain of profound confusion, which, more often than not, was sexual.
Ginger is non-addictive. Cocaine is.
Look, the fact that Laura Palmer sought medication, no matter how dubious, was actually a positive sign.
Dr. Jacoby, I understand you care deeply for Laura Palmer. Why is it that you won't help us?
My own personal investigation, I suspect, will be ongoing for the rest of my life. Laura had secrets. And around those secrets, she built a fortress. Well, that in my 6 months with her, I was not able to penetrate. And for which I consider myself an abject failure.
Doctor, did Laura ever discuss Bobby Briggs or James Hurley with you?
Yeah, they were boys. Laura was a woman.
She had sex with three men the night she was murdered. Were you one of them?
No.
Now, this is possibly a reference to the underlying struggle happening in Twin Peaks as a whole. A microcosm of the macrocosm of the entire universe, because there's a lot of occultists that subscribe to the idea of a sexual tension going on of opposing polarities in the universe, right? So if you look at the entire story, Twin Peaks, from the perspective of sex magic, you could argue that Dr. Jacoby is giving us a major clue right here. Because human, and let's talk about sex magic as a whole, because sex magic just plays on this creative force. The occultists believe that human sexuality is the gateway to deeper unconscious processes, meaning they function below conscious thought and action. Sex is believed to be the underlying force of all occult practices. We're talking about Western esotericism, alchemy, ritual magic, hermeticism, all that stuff. And I know we're getting nerdy here, folks. Sorry. But the opposing forces, this male-female opposing polarities, they're a reflection of the true nature of God. According to Gnosticism, that this is all occult thinking, right? In Gnosticism, there's these perfected pairs of positive and negative, the CGs, they're called. And that means that when male and female come together, it's a magical operation. Sex is a magical operation, it's a creative act, and it's kind of real, right? You're creating something. And I, you know, hundreds of years ago, it must have seemed like magic. because sex is the living symbol of God creating reality. Now, in Kabbalah, the union of male and female is about reuniting the same male and female polarities of the God, the real God. And of course, God, and what's weird is in the occult, you find a lot of parallels to modern, you know, Abrahamic religions. They believe that humans are mirrors of the divine. That's what they call God. So it's kind of paying homage to God and recreating God forces. That's why they use sex magic during that, during sexy time. Jack Parsons, who plays a role in the Twin Peaks saga, he saw tarot cards as a way to illuminate one's travel throughout the Kabbalistic tree of life. And the aim is to bring sexual union of male and female aspects of God through sacred deeds, ritualistic actions, and so on, because they're trying to actualize God to change the world according to their will, in a way, I think, maybe. Also, occultists believe that there's psychic energy found at paranormal sites, such as the woods of Twin Peaks, the Ghostwood National Forest. They say there's all this weird paranormal stuff in Twin Peaks. Well, the paranormal events have the same energy as those found in sex magic. Wilhelm Reich talked about this with the Orgon energy, which the Will Smith's kids were pushing for a while, from what I recall. And Paracelsus talked about the astral light, because poltergeists were believed to be coming from a disturbed adolescent who's unable to earth their sexual energies with a partner, which makes you think of the movie Poltergeist, right? It's a young girl who is the catalyst for the paranormal activity in that house. I got a lot of notes here. I'm trying to not go through them all. Researchers say that poltergeists are found in homes of people who actually masturbate excessively because they're releasing too much sexual energy and not grounding it, not earthing it with a partner. Interesting idea. Is it true? I have no idea. I'm not here to tell you what's real or not. In Tantra, which is a sexual occult sort of practice, I'd assume David Lynch is familiar with, because he is very fond of transcendental meditation, and transcendental meditation has roots in tantric tradition of the East. Well, in Tantra, they believe the universe is actually a perfected opposing polarity locked together, this male and female pair. They call it the Shiva and the Shakti. Whereas, you know, and they believe that the Shakti, the female, is the primal creative active force, the great goddess, the mother goddess, and the vehicle for Shakti is women, right? The womb. And there's a lot of connections of Tantra when you get into the occult and sex magic. Anyway, the point being, Dr. Jacoby, in that clip, tells Cooper his... Because, again, there's a map of Tibet on the wall. Dr. Jacoby tells him, my interests lie in the East as well. It's his way of saying, I understand these things as well. Also, you know, when we get to season 3, we're going to talk about the nuclear processes of the atomic bomb. And nuclear fission is actually the breaking part of balanced atoms, perfected pairs that make up primordial matter. And in terms of the occult, it's splitting the Kabbalistic spark of creation. Anyway, Dr. Jacoby, he says his interests lie in the East. He talks about some Hawaii things. And he reiterates, Laura had secrets. And he's trying, and he says, I was trying to penetrate those secrets, which makes me think of sex, right? As a sexual term, which is kind of gross, right? This old doctor dude trying to sleep with a 17-year-old girl. But anyway, if you recall season one, episode two, the man from another place said that the woman in the waiting room who pretty looks like Laura Palmer, it's Laura Palmer, right? But the woman in the waiting room who looked like Laura, he said she's filled with secrets. Is this a connection that Dr. Jacoby is saying that, yeah, that really is Laura Palmer in the waiting room? But then that begs the question, why would the man from another place try to be Buffalo and Cooper into thinking it's someone else? Like, and I don't know if I've said this yet. If I said it before, I'm going to say it again, too. This analysis of Twin Peaks is going to be a really deep dive into Twin Peaks, okay? As you already know. I am not going to answer all the questions because A, I don't have the time. B, I really can't. C, I wouldn't want to. I want you to get into Twin Peaks and to enjoy the exploration of it, because you're going to find when you start digging into these topics, there's resources and theories all over the internet, and we're not even scratching the surface. This thing is so complex and so layered, there's simply no way. If I wrote a book that covered every theory and every idea, along with my own theories and my own ideas, along with the sort of literal part of the show or the soap opera part of the show, it would be volumes and volumes. It'd be an encyclopedia. And ain't nobody got time for that. Also, during the scene, Cooper says Laura had sex with three men the night she died. That number three, we're going to talk about that in a little bit here. She had sex with three men the night she died and asked Jacoby if he was one of them. He, of course, declines, but points the finger towards the red sports car, that which, of course, is Leo Johnson's. So the mystery is unfolding, okay? Next thing, Cooper takes a phone call from his boss, Gordon Cole, played by David Lynch, who relays what Albert found in the autopsy, including how Laura was apparently bitten by some birds and she had some plastic remnants in her stomach. Truman comes in and shows Cooper the sketch of Bob, and Cooper confirms that this was in fact the figure of his dreams, albeit the eyes are a little closer, and he had intuition that his dream and Sarah Palmer's vision of Bob were actually one and the same. They were connected. Cooper claimed that he didn't go to the Palmer residence to get that sketch because he's a strong sender, meaning he's telepathic. Telepathy is one of the supernatural abilities referred to as siddhis in the Eastern traditions, the Indian religions, such as Tibetan Buddhism. So again, another reference to Tibet. If you've ever read the autobiography of a yogi, is that what it's called? That Yogananda book. I read it many years ago. He talked about how he had the siddhis. He could levitate and flow through doors and flow through walls and all this wild stuff, right? But in Tibetan Buddhism, the Vasitva, I'm probably mispronouncing that, Vasitva, is the seedy ability to force influence upon others, and that's what Cooper claims he's got. We later find out that, okay, so now we're at the Timber Falls Motel. Hawk tracks the one-armed man that he saw in, was it the first episode, running through the hospital? Tracks the one-armed man to the motel, and he's in room 101. This is on purpose. If you watch The Matrix or heard my analysis of The Matrix series, Neo Anderson, his apartment is, he's in apartment number 101. Because one is the foundation of all things. The Matrix, it demonstrated many Gnostic and Buddhist ideas as well. So to see it here in Twin Peaks, not shocked about it, right? Well, actually, Twin Peaks was before The Matrix, so maybe The Matrix took it off of Lynch. I don't know. So they get in, Philip Girardi's inside the room. In fact, he does only have one arm. meanwhile, in another room at the motel, Ben Horn and Catherine, they're sleeping together. Ben Horn they're sleeping together talking about shady business. And Ben grabs a little Elvis figurine and says, "I'm going to go give little Elvis a bath." I didn't know what that meant. I looked it up. Apparently, it was he was referring to going to wash his schwants, but the censors wouldn't allow that, so they improvised and made him hold a little Elvis doll and whatever, right? So Philip Gerard, he says that they're interrogating him about the veterinarian, right? He says Bob Lidecker is his best friend. He's a veterinarian, and he's in a coma. So that means Cooper and Truman, they're going to go investigate this veterinarian because they're trying to sort of piece together the bird and all this stuff, right? We find out that Philip Gerard lost his arm in a car accident when he was leaving Memphis. And we also find out his arm had a tattoo that said Mom. And recall that Cooper had dreamt about this and thought it said Fire Walk With Me. We'll probably come back to that in the future, right? We're still trying to unpack what Fire Walk With Me means at this point. But he's coming from Memphis. Memphis is very important in terms of occult symbolism. It goes back to alchemy because Memphis was in Greater Cairo, Egypt, along the Nile River. And the Nile River is where the fertile soil was, and that's what alchemy means. It means the black soil because that's where Thoth came and talked to mankind about how to live with the alchemical great work of ascending into becoming God. Memphis had obviously lots of temples, lots of pharaohs, and all this matters to the occultists, right? There's a ritual in Freemasonry called the Rite of Memphis. And that's a branch of Freemasonry. Aleister Crowley was a member of the Rite of Memphis. And that's what Freemasonry goes back to ancient Egypt, of course. Now, what's interesting, if you read a book, Lords of the Left-Hand Path by Michael Flowers, Dr. Michael Flowers, it talks about how Northern Egypt and Southern Egypt were unified and they merged at Memphis, right? I'm going to read to you from the book. The continuity of the value of Setian ritual and magical symbolism can be seen clearly in the double crown of the pharaoh, which is made up of the red crown of northern Egypt and the white crown of southern Egypt, and the scepters of Waz and Cham, which are clear symbolic representation of the Set animal. These scepters were signs of the divine power that could be wielded by the gods and their incarnate agents, the pharaohs. We're talking about wielding the power of God, right? Now, what it's saying is that the Setian Egyptian magic was still utilized after these two groups unified. Divine power from the gods or Satan, because Set is oftentimes referred to as Satan, because southern Egypt was where Set was, and they referred to it as the outsider, the other. Set Awas was also the spirit that gave Crowley the Book of the Law, because Set and Horus were, again, opposing forces. You got that opposing force idea. Anyway, Philip Gerard, the one-armed man, he sells shoes. His suitcase is full of right shoes only, which I thought maybe there was a symbolic reference for that. But he's missing his left arm, which makes me think of the left-hand path, which is the path of antinomianism, which is separation from the consciousness of the Christian God, okay? A lot of the satanic religions, they're self-centered, and they're antinomian, they're left-hand path practices. So Gerard loses his left arm, but then I thought, well, maybe there's a rational reason. Maybe it's because he's only got his right arm, it's easier to put on right shoes for his customers. I don't know. Again, one of these things you could dig into if you want to. I'm sure there's theories all over the place. Meanwhile, Audrey, she confronts Donna in the bathroom to try and solve the mystery of Laura's death, and she's actually putting all the pieces together. She's summing it up. Laura was wild. She was, in fact, dating Dr. Jacoby, and Audrey thinks that Laura might have been working at One Eye Jack's, the whore home with Ronette Pulaski. Because both of them worked at her father's department store, the Horns department store perfume counter. Meanwhile, Norma's husband, who's in prison for manslaughter, he has a parole hearing, and Is he in prison for manslaughter or something else? I don't remember. It might be something else. Don't quote me on that. Hank has his parole hearing and he's shuffling a domino. It's very clear that they're trying to show us it has the side of the value of six. There's two sets of threes on the dominoes, the dots, right? Meaning six. And what he does, he eventually gets permission to get paroled. Norm is, of course, apprehensive about his return. But what's the meaning of the six on the domino? That's what we're concerned with right here. We could postulate about it, but apparently the actor who plays Hank, Chris Mulkey, revealed what it really means at a 1999 Twin Peaks festival. He said that the number three represents magic and doubling it to six represents mysticism. Okay. Lots of questions here. Let's look at the number three. Pythagoras believed it was a perfect number that had harmony, perfection, and the divine proportion. We oftentimes gravitate towards the number three, using it in our daily lives. There's a concept called the rule of three, used in virtually all presentations and lectures and stand-up comedy and advertising, that says you need to present concepts in groups of three to make it more effective. Threes are also very significant in religion, like Christianity. You've got the Holy Trinity. And then previously we heard Laura had sex with three men. And in Freemasonry, Hiram Abiff gets jumped by three hoodlums or assassins or whatever they're called. Albert Mackey's Encyclopedia of Freemasonry says, everywhere among the ancients, the number three was deemed the most sacred of numbers. In Freemasonry, the ternary is the most sacred of all mystical numbers. So there's that mystical idea. Did Hank read the Encyclopedia of Freemasonry by Albert Mackey? I don't know. Maybe. So do three dots on a domino represent magic? Well, if we look at the Hebrew mysticism of Kabbalah, we can find some interesting ideas about the dot. I'm going to read you from Kabbalah.Vicorias.com about the letter Yod, all right? Yod, being the smallest letter of the Hebrew alphabet, represents the spiritual, all which is beyond the physical, yet it plays the most important role in the whole of creation. Yod represents a mere dot, iota, or iota. A lot of Americans pronounce it iota, the Greek letter. It's actually iota in Greek. This Greek word, obviously, is a close relative of yod, a little speck, a tiny point in which all the divine energy of creation is concerned. Okay. Now here, get ready. So I hope you're sitting down. I'm going to keep reading here. Yod means arm or hand, as in hand of the creator. So here we are. We're only on the fourth episode, which is appropriately named The One-Armed Man. And we're already starting to wonder. Do you remember how the man from another place called himself the arm? And Philip Gerard, Mike, he's only got one arm. Are these things connected to Kabbalah? What does it truly mean? Yod means arm. Well, I got a theory for you. Yod is the 10th letter of the Hebrew alphabet, and it represents God. It represents the number of completion. And you're going to hear more about this in season 3. Because the number 253 or 253 p.m. or a.m. or whatever, 253 is 10, the number of completion. Plays a big role in Twin Peaks. So a very interesting connection here that we uncovered. Moving on. Cooper and Truman, they head to the convenience store. Remember, Cooper had a dream about Mike and Bob living above a convenience store. Well, here we see the one-stop shop. In fact, he even questions, is this the convenience store? More to come, right? If you've already finished Twin Peaks, you know we got more to come on the convenience store. But next to the store is the veterinarian that Philip Gerard says he's friends with and he's in a coma. Bob Lidecker. And you'll see, and I'm going to put the photo on the Instagram. I hope you're liking and subscribing at Isaac Weishaupt. The sign says Lidecker Veterinarian Clinic. But below it, it says Aid to the Beast Incarnate. My goodness. Illuminate confirm. The term beast incarnate is an odd reference for a veterinarian, is it not? Because the beast typically refers to the Antichrist. And incarnating the Antichrist is generally speaking a bad thing. So Cooper and Truman go in there. They think that the bird that attacked Laura possibly went to this veterinarian clinic. Meanwhile, Bobby, he's talking to Shelley at the house there. And he tells Shelley that Leo and Jacques were transporting and selling coke to Twin Peaks school students. And he acts like he wasn't any part of this terrible drug trafficking. She, in turn, shows him the bloody shirt Leo gave her way back when, and she's been hiding it. And Bobby's going to take it. He's going to set up Leo to the cops to have him arrested. And Shelley's cool with that because Leo deserves it. He's a wife beater. He's a jerk. Also, a little subtle sex reference on this episode. A lot of sex in this episode. I'm going to put the photo on Instagram. Bobby's wearing a mechanic shirt, and it doesn't say Bobby. It says Dick. And Shelley is clearly very aggressively trying to get piped down on her lunch break with Bobby right now. So Truman and Cooper, they're at the shooting range trying to help Andy deal with this rocky relationship he's got with Lucy. They're shooting some rounds off because Andy, you know, God bless Andy. He's just a goofball. He dropped his piece earlier at the motel. It was a whole scene. And then over at the Double R Diner, Shelley and Norma, they're commiserating about their issues they've got with their men. They picked some bad boys, and now they're kind of regretting it. Well, not Shelley. She went from one bad boy to another. Norma, she's got her bad boy Hank in out of prison, but she wants to get with a good guy, Big Ed. Lucy is tasked with going through all the veterinarian pet files to try and figure out what the bird name was that was attacking Laura. She calls Truman to tell him, hey, these files are not by species, but they're by name. They're alphabetical. Now, you might not think much of that. But remember that David Lynch said there's not a day goes by that he doesn't think about Wizard of Oz. And by goodness, my goodness, so do we. I've done many Wizard of Oz. We did what? 4 Wizard of Oz deep dives. And you'll know that in the Wizard of Oz mythology, there is one claim, one theory about the name Oz. And it's alleged that it came about when Theosophist L. Frank Baum was looking at some folders in a drawer, and they were divided up A through N, then O through Z. O-Z. So is this a little subtle nod to Wizard of Oz? Possibly. All right. We confirm that Audrey's got issues with her father, Ben Horn. She feels that he's ashamed of her, and he kind of is, because he's a jerk, right? She blew the deal with the Norwegians when she told them about Laura's death, after specifically she was told not to talk about it. She wants to now help with the business, since she could be the one to inherit the business. Ben doesn't seem very interested or trusting. And maybe he's right, because Audrey, she's trying to get to the bottom of this. She's actually trying to get to the bottom of the Laura Palmer murder. So she wants to get into the department store at the perfume counter, figure out what's going on. Is there a link between that and One-Eyed Jax? And Ben, he kind of knows this, right? And he wants her to help make beds at the Great Northern, but she's like, nah, how about I work at the perfume counter at the department store instead? Meanwhile, law enforcement, they head over to Jacques Renault's house. And what do you know? They find Leo's bloody shirt. Huh, who would have thought? Because Bobby planted it there. Ben Horn, he goes out in the woods, those creepy woods, and he meets Leo because he's trying to make a deal for Leo to burn down the sawmill. And we find out Leo apparently killed Bernard for talking to the police. Then, almost finally, Donna is talking to James and out in the woods about Laura. And we hear that Laura was saying that her mother had spooky visions. There's some paranormal activity within the bloodline there. And they do this, and the owl up in the tree hoots at them while they're looking for this broken-hearted necklace, which they find out has in fact been removed. The owls are not what they seem. The owls are watching. They hear this talk about the spooky visions, and they let it be known, hey, we're up here. We ain't going nowhere. We're about to do some spooky things ourselves. I don't know what they're doing. Then the last scene, Hank sends an ominous message to Josie, a sketch of a domino with the six dots. What does it all mean? Well, my friends, we're going to have to try to find out later, because that's it for this episode. And it was a good one. There's a lot of stuff to unpack in there. That was season 1, episode 4, The One-Armed Man. So your homework, should you choose to accept it, and you should. Season 1, episode 5, Cooper's Dreams. Because things are only going to get weirder, but better at the same time. So I hope you enjoyed it. Thanks for listening to the show. And until next time, stay woke.